The following interview was recorded for CFRO The Pulse, Vancouver Co-op Radio's daily news show. The Pulse airs Monday to Friday at 7 a.m. on 100.5 FM and streaming live at cooperadio.org. On today's show, Sandy Goldman talks to Julia Hunter, former executive director of Food Stash, an organization dedicated to reducing the environmental impact of food waste and bridge the food insecurity gap that exists within our communities.
I'm Sandy Goldman for The Pulse. I was recently in my neighborhood Safeway and noticed a staff member throwing boxes of local berries into the garbage. I asked if these would be saved for use elsewhere, but was told no, the food would end up in the dumpster. I was very concerned, knowing that food insecurity has been steadily increasing, particularly during the COVID-19 pandemic. I looked into whether we had any organizations rescuing and redistributing food in Vancouver, and to my great relief, the Food Stash Foundation is doing just that. Former Executive Director Julia Hunter explains.
Food Stash is in its fifth year of operation. We were founded in 2016 by David Shine, who at first was inspired after watching a documentary called Just Eat It. And in that documentary, it highlighted the challenges and the amount of food that goes to waste, not only in Vancouver, where we operate, but around the world as well. And then at the same time, the issue of food insecurity being so high in a first world country like Canada. So David set out initially as a one-man mission, just picking up food from local grocers and shops and redistributing that perishable surplus food that would otherwise go to waste to other local charities. And then after about 2 years of that redistribution that he set up, they then went on to launch the Rescue Food Box program, which still runs to this day. And so that was an attempt to rescue that surplus food and then not only redistribute it to organizations, but also be able to support families and individuals at the household level. So those boxes of perishable healthy food, half of which is fruits and veggies, milk, meat, packed with goodness, those are distributed to food insecure households across Vancouver. And so really Food Stash's twofold mission is one of the environmental side of food waste. And then the second fold is the food insecurity that continues to exist and is only getting worse due to COVID-19. So we attempt to connect those two and bridge that gap.
Let's talk about the environmental effect of all this food waste, because I'm not sure that people really think about that, but it's important to know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so when we think about, let's just picture ourselves in our homes right now, when we put food in the compost and that goes to a landfill or a composting facility, that food breaks down into methane, which is a greenhouse gas. And we know that greenhouse gases are what contribute or what are contributing currently to the climate change crisis that we're in. So worldwide, if food waste were a country, it would be the third largest greenhouse gas emitter in the world. And every year in Canada, over 56 million metric tons of carbon dioxide equivalent emissions created by food waste is released. So that's just to give you an idea of the scale of the problem of food waste. And that's at every level as well, right from production at the farm level through processing, manufacturing, distribution, the retail side, which is where Food Stash is currently primarily focused, is grocery stores and retail. And then at the household level too, there's food waste.
In your experience, is so much food getting wasted? What is that attributable to? Are we just lazy? Is too much food being produced? Are grocers too fussy? Is the public too fussy if a piece of fruit has a blemish? I mean, where does this originate from, do you think?
Yeah, I'll give my opinion. I mean, I think lots of reasons. It's definitely a systemic issue. The first few things that come to my mind are the fact that our current food system is designed for yield, to make as much food as possible to meet the demand. But we have enough food. It's not a lack of food. It's really is a distribution problem. And so, as I mentioned earlier, along that food chain, food is going to waste at every single level. So we're producing a high yield, but we're not able to distribute that food in a sustainable way to make sure that all of it is utilized. And then, as you mentioned too, there's issues like quality standards at every level of the food supply chain. So let's say apples, for example, if there's a blemish or a mark or some, you know, little bruise, that might not make it to the next stage of the supply chain, and that would get taken out and go to waste. At the retail level, best before dates are a huge topic that we try to educate others about at Food Stash. And so in grocery stores, items might actually be taken, or are, they are taken off the shelf if they're approaching that best before date. And that's just because of the policies and procedures that are in place, where these companies only want, you know, the best of the best of their product on those shelves. Even if that item passes that best before date, it's still perfectly healthy. It's safe to consume. It really is just a marker of like quality freshness, but it doesn't mean that it's, you know, expired or rancid or whatnot. So we're able to actually take that product, whether it's milk, yogurt, meat, we're able to take because we instantly freeze it, and then we're able to redistribute it frozen. And so we're able to capture that product, again, that is still perfectly good, and be able to connect it to people who need it most. And then at the household level, you know, I think a lot could be said for educating people about reducing food waste in the home. I do think, though, that, as I said earlier, it's a massive systemic issue. So to point the finger at individuals at the household level would be missing a massive part of why the problem exists in the first place. But it still is important to know about how you can reduce food waste in the home. I think more importantly, connecting to where your food comes from, whether that's a community garden, maybe growing your own vegetables, because when folks start to connect to that aspect, they really look at food differently and value it more, and are a little more conscious of, you know, maybe how much food they're buying at the grocery store, or how they're organizing their fridge to make sure they're not buying too much. So yeah, I think all along there's ways to design it in a better way where food is valued as the resource.
Let's talk about some of the donors. You've got quite a list, from Whole Foods to IGA, and then smaller bakeries and whatnot. When you approach a donor, I understand sometimes it's very hard. They're reluctant to get on board. How do you get new donors to buy in?
It's funny. When I first started, I'd had a lot of conversations with potential food suppliers and donors, and they were hesitant because of liability concerns of donating product, especially if you're dealing with dairy or meat. And so what we say to folks is that there is a Donor Encouragement Act in BC and also Canada-wide that encourages food donors to donate food, and actually removes that liability piece, so that they can donate food without worry, and in good faith to organizations. So that's the biggest question that comes up, or hesitancy. Luckily, in the 2.5 years that I've been a part of Food Stash, I've already noticed a massive shift and momentum gaining, especially in Vancouver. I find Vancouver is very environmentally friendly. People really care about green initiatives and wanting to reduce their footprint and get involved with their community. So in those 2.5 years, it's really been food donors reaching out to us. Like, we don't need to do much outreach. Where we need to do outreach are farms, because those are a little further away in the lower mainland. But in terms of the city, we've been fortunate to work with, as you mentioned, Whole Foods, IGA. We work with a lot of Save-On's, Stong's Market, both locations in North Van and on Dunbar. And so the grocery retailers are getting it. And luckily, when one jumps on the ship, all of them want to jump on that ship, because they realize, you know, this is a no-brainer. This is a win-win. And so if we can work with retailers, and we also work with some strategic partners like Food Mesh to track that data, because these suppliers also want to know the quantity of food that's going out to inform their own, you know, ordering systems or processes, so that maybe years down the road they can order less or somehow become more efficient. Right. So working with partners like Food Mesh allow us to rescue that food and redistribute it, but also get really accurate data that can be looped back to that supplier so that they can potentially make changes internally as well. So
that's very encouraging to hear that there's more buy-in and they're getting on board with that. From the charity side, the charities that are receiving the rescued food, how is that food being used? For example, the Kettle Society or others, Inland Refugee Society, others that you work with, and you've got quite a few charities that you support.
Yeah, over 20 charities that we work with currently, and that list grows in tandem with the number of suppliers we have. But yeah, we're lucky to work with a variety of charities. We're also lucky to have an amazing driver team that really individualizes that experience once they arrive at the charity. And it is quite individualized because we realize that the charities we work with aren't all the same. It's not all cookie cutter. Some of them are housing units or providers. Some of them are walk-in resource centers or homeless shelters. Some of them are community kitchens making meals. Some of them have cold storage, some of them don't. And so working with the partners to make sure that the food that we're delivering to them can actually be used, because we don't want food going to waste at the charity level either. We want to make sure that the food we're giving them is actually suitable for the programs and the infrastructure that they have to work with. So about 50% of the charities we work with around there are in the downtown east side. And we've had some long-term partnerships, like you mentioned, the Kettle Society. We've been delivering to them since before my time at Food Stash, so quite a while now. And then some other charities we work with are across Vancouver, some into Burnaby, because we used to be located at YVR Prep, which is right off Boundary Road. So we do have some Burnaby-based charities. But yeah, it's really about matching what we know we're going to get in surplus or can predict to a charity that can actually utilize that food. And then occasionally we do have surplus in our own warehouse that doesn't make it into the food box program and didn't make it into the charity redistribution program. And so we also work with platforms like foodrescue.ca, which is an arm of Second Harvest in Toronto, to post that product, and then other charities can claim that surplus. So we're able to make those kind of like ad hoc pickups every now and again. And it also helps us to create more connections in the community, because charities that we've maybe never heard of or worked with are suddenly coming out to pick up, you know, let's say like 8 boxes of bread that we couldn't redistribute that week. And so that's really helpful for us as well in terms of broadening our network. Right now, we're at about 70,000 pounds of perishable food per month that we're rescuing and redistributing. About 75% of that monthly total goes to our partner charities. The other 25% comes back to the warehouse, where we sort through it, package it up into those rescued food boxes, and deliver it to households. This year, and luckily thanks to the partnership with Shift Delivery over 2020, we've been able to really scale that food box delivery with the help of their electric trikes that they deliver those food boxes with. And we've also been really fortunate to receive a Sprinter van donated to us from Whole Foods Market that we just received in June. So we're very excited about it.
That's excellent.
Yeah. And so when we think about our fleet, we really have 2 vehicles going full tilt 7 days a week, which has allowed us to get to that 70,000 pounds. Now with that Sprinter van, it will likely, once we have enough suppliers built into that vehicle, it will likely enable us to bring on another 30,000 pounds per month. And so on an annual basis, that will allow us to achieve over 1 million pounds of rescued food redistributed per year. So it is a massive puzzle piece. You need the fleet to rescue the food. You need some charity partners that can accept a large quantity of that food for their programming. And then we also need to be mindful of our logistics for our food boxes. we wanted to scale that program, we also wanted to do it in a way that was environmentally friendly and not reliant on fossil fuels. And so although it took, you know, finding funding and that partnership with Shift Delivery and really mapping out how to scale that program, we're really proud to be at a point where we're at 100 households per week, mindful of our own footprint. And it's a logistical puzzle piece, but we find a way.
Let's talk about the Rescued Food Box program. Families or individuals, I guess, that want to receive a box, how do they go about receiving that? Is there an application? Do they have to have a referral? How does that work? And is there a cost involved to the recipients?
Mm-hmm. Initially, we did do a referral process. So we asked individuals to connect with, you know, a community health center, a social worker, whatever it might be. And that organization would refer them to the program. We wanted to make sure that we were serving the individuals who needed the program the most. And so that's why that referral helped in that process. But one of the learnings we had during COVID-19 was getting a referral was a massive barrier for people who were self-isolating, or suddenly at home with two or three kids and leaving the house was just logistically really hard for them. And so we actually removed that referral process last year and changed it into a self-referral, where we just asked people to describe in a sentence or two why they wanted to join the program. So it's a little bit of a honor system, but so far we've had really good feedback from people. I think the last thing, you know, if you're food insecure, you know, it's, if you're not getting enough food, that's stressful, right? So we don't want to add another barrier to the program. We want it to be as accessible, inclusive as possible. So it's been going really well so far. It's also helped us reach our 100 household per week target. I think we'll be reaching that actually this month. So we're just happy to be able to welcome in people who want to be a part of this program. And we also get really good feedback from our members who are conscious themselves of the food waste of their box. I actually just got a call this morning. One of our members was mentioning how she's finding that a lot of the meat she can't get through herself. And so she wanted to switch to a vegetarian box. And so our program members are they give us really good feedback. They're very engaged. And you asked before about the cost of the box. So we actually do have a monthly fee. It's not attributed to the food itself. It just helps cover the delivery cost. And so our members pay $10 per delivery. So if someone's receiving a weekly food box, their invoice would be $40 for the month. And then we do have individuals who get a bi-weekly box. So that would, of course, be $20 per month. So again, that fee is for the delivery process. It also, we find, helps to really open that line of communication, because when someone is paying for a service, they have a certain level of expectation, you know, that they want out of that program. So by them paying that fee, it also empowers them to give us really honest feedback, which we really appreciate, because we obviously want to make sure that the program meets their needs and their expectations.
It must be very gratifying to have all these folks involved in the efforts, whether it's, you know, a bakery giving, you know, 10 loaves of bread a week to, you know, food box recipients, to charities using that food in, you know, community kitchens, and one thing another, plus all your volunteers and staff. Julia, you're leaving after a number of years as being involved with Food Stash, and lately as executive director, and you're going on to the next chapter. What's your takeaway personally and professionally here as you move on to some other ground?
It really takes a village. I think that's my biggest takeaway. When I came into this role with Food Stash and David was stepping onto the board, we were at this stage where we were just right on the cusp. It was this extremely impactful grassroots organization. I remember my first couple of weeks just seeing the number of volunteers. Like, I would show up to a sorting session, there'd be 20 people just sorting through food. And I was like, where did you hear and how did you hear about Food Stash? And like, wow, there's just so many of you. And it just really struck me as something special. And it was in those first few weeks that I realized the potential of this organization. And at the end of the day, everyone needs and deserves the right to access food. And so the reason we deal with so many partners is because of that impact we want to have and because of the support that we need to do the work that we do, whether it's on the supplier side, donors, charity partners, volunteers, which truly make our world go round, right down to our program members who are also champions for Food Stash out in the community. And of course, our staff team that has grown, I think, by fivefold now, that has really built our capacity internally. So it's been a wild ride. It's been very fulfilling. There will always be challenges in the food waste sector, and I'm just grateful to have been a part of this last chapter.
That was Julia Hunter, former executive director of the Food Stash Foundation. For more information about Food Stash, including the Food Box program and volunteer opportunities, go to foodstash.ca. I'm Sandy Goldman for The Pulse.
That was Julia Hunter, former executive director of the Food Stash Foundation. For more information, please go to foodstash.ca. Sandy Goldman is a co-op radio programmer on Each for All, focusing on co-ops and social economy organizations, and is heard on Tuesday evenings at 8 o'clock. CFRO The Pulse is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, a program funded by Heritage Canada and administered through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.